Good morning, everyone. This is a very loud microphone. This meeting of the House Committee on Regional Affairs Committee will now come to order. It is Tuesday, February 27th, and the time is 8:03 a.m. Members present are Representative Baker, Representative McKay, Representative Mears, Representative Himshute, and myself, Representative Quorum. Let the record reflect. We have... Did I say Representative Quorum?
Yeah, you did.
Getting ahead of myself. We have Quorum. Representative McCormick is here, too. We have a quorum to conduct business. Today, our recording secretary is Sophia Tenney, and Zach Lawhorn is our LIO moderator. And my staff, Stephanie Andrew, is our committee aide. I want to thank everyone for your assistance in facilitating today's meeting. But I would also like to note, for the record, we were joined by Representative Ruffridge at 8:04 a.m. Today, we will hear an introduction to HB 234, which is related to missing and murdered Indigenous persons. My staff, Callan Jaithluk, not Chaithluk, it's Jaithluk Sifsoff, will be presenting the bill. And I would also just like to make a few comments before handing the presentation over to my very capable staff. And as time allows, we will try to get through as much public testimony as possible. So, Ms. Jaithluk Sifsoff, if you could please come forward. I guess now that the vice chair is here, I will briefly hand over the gavel to make some remarks, and then we can get the presentation started. So I'll call Brief Eddies to go to the table. Brief Eddies.
Back on the record, Vice Chair McCabe, who has joined us with the great joy. Representative McCormick, would you and your staff introduce your staff, put yourself on record, and present your bill, please?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative McCormick, Lower Kuskokwim District, and I'm joined this morning by my staffer, Callan Jaithluk Sifsoff.
For the record, my name is Callan Jaithluk Sifsoff, staff for Representative McCormick.
Thank you. Through the chair. Just before getting started, I just wanted to speak to this bill and the importance of this bill. The high statistics of murder and missing Indigenous persons has made headlines lately due to a lot of recent data that's been released, and I also think there's been some television shows that have illustrated the problem. But this has been a phenomenon that has been known among rural communities and across Indigenous communities across the state, across the country. The YK Delta and all of Bush Alaska have seen multiple MIP cases throughout my lifetime, both recently and a lot in the past. This is an issue that's affected our communities, people I care about, people we all care about, my region, and our state. I think I often make the mistake of talking about this in a rural context, but I want to be very clear in saying that the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous people is one that affects every corner of the state, urban, rural, and in between. It's also an issue that all of America faces, and when I say all of America, I mean North America, so that includes Canada, and that includes Mexico as well. Before engaging in discussion on this, I just wanted to kind of say that I have a proclivity to talk about rural, but this is really an issue that affects all of us. And with that, I want to say that I'm really glad to see the diverse regions that are represented in this committee. We obviously kind of have three representatives from the Bush. We have Representative Baker from D40. We have my staffer, who is a resident of D37. And then we have a number of representatives from around the state as well. So I just think that we couldn't be passing this bill soon enough. You know, we started on this bill in the summer, but it recently also kind of came to my attention throughout this session that we've seen flat funding of domestic violence shelters throughout the state, flat funding or a lot of domestic violence shelters that are in threat of losing their funding. And so at a time like this, we need to move quickly to address this problem. So all of that is to say HB 234, equips the state of Alaska, law enforcement, communities, families, and tribes with the tools to protect individuals each day and put to rest cold cases. Before reassuming my chair, I just wanted to also say that this is a very sensitive topic for a lot of folks. There's a slide that we'll get to at one point in time that has names on it of people that I know, people that I went to school with, and so I would just appreciate patience and understanding when we're talking about these issues. So, nonetheless, I want to thank this committee for the time, and I think we'll get started now. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair McCormick. And how do you want to proceed? You want to go through the slides? Is that okay? And I assume that your staff is going to do that, Callan. Thank you. Sifsoff.
Yeah, thank you, Vice Chair McCade. For the record, my name is Callan Trifluck Sifsoff, staff for Rep. McCormick, Representative McCormick. Today we're going to be speaking to House Bill 234, and I apologize, the slides had animation, but right now they do not. But HB 234, I'm going to read verbatim what's on the slide there. It's an act relating to police officer training, establishing the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons Review Commission, relating to missing and murdered Indigenous persons, relating to the duties of the Department of Public Safety, and providing for an effective date. This is a companion bill to Senator Olson's SB 151. HB 234 does four things. Each one of these components are integral to the bill. It mandates cultural training under the Police Standards Council. excuse me. It mandates under state statute two MMIP full-time investigative positions under DPS. It establishes the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons Review Commission into state statute, and it also requires that DPS submit an annual needs assessment report to the legislature. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the acronym MMIP. This is Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons. This is a national and state crisis, and as Representative McCormick has said, it's received quite a bit of national headlines due to the statistics and data that has come out. Thank you very much. There's been numerous reports, and we'll get to those reports later on in the slide deck. But essentially, this is a phenomenon that's gained nationwide attention due to high statistics. Like Representative McCormick has stated, this is both an urban and a rural issue. Nationwide, it's an urban and rural issue. And then on the next slide, we'll speak to the Alaska components that make this issue unique to our state. We also have a unique relationship with law enforcement access in this state. And this slide specifically is speaking to the national crisis. Again, these are all data reporting statistics that are nationwide and also have to do with cultural and historical biases in the United States. In Alaska, that's kind of exponentially compounded, as most of everything is. Our remote nature of our state creates a lot of different challenges. And so the high rates that we see in the state of Alaska are notably high. As a state, we're singled out in geography in quite a number of reports. And that's due to the unique nature of our landscape. And these rates in the state of Alaska are such that they require immediate attention. And that's very clear. We have unique jurisdictional challenges. We have village patrol officers, village safety patrol officers. We have tribal police. We have state troopers, and we have police departments. And so those multiple jurisdictions create communication challenges when it comes to missing persons in the state. We have a high number of Indigenous communities, and also notably, a lot of culturally practicing communities, fluent in other languages and practicing each day, which, again, is just another component that makes us a little bit unique with the statistics. We have a severe lack of law enforcement access historically and currently, in the modern time. And we also have historic investigative biases in a lot of rural communities, such as District 38. We have a lot of hub communities and smaller surrounding villages. And those jurisdictions, again, get more complicated as you go further to the remote areas of our state. The limited road access is also another unique challenge in Alaska. We have hub communities, and then we also have Anchorage as our major hub community, and constituents across the state are traveling back and forth routinely. I'm going to speak to four MMIP reports right now, but there are quite a number to be found. I have a number of documents that I can submit that are additional reports as well, but we're going to speak to these four, and they're the most recent. The 2018 UIHI report, this is the Urban Indian Health Institute report, and this is quite a robust report that's nationwide. And in this report, Alaska was singled out by geography, again, due to the previous slide and the nuances of our state. Anchorage currently ranks third highest for MMIP cases by city in the country. Alaska ranks fourth highest MMIP cases by state. Anchorage is currently in the top five cities in the country of cases that were not currently in law enforcement data. What the Urban Indian Health Institute report had to do often, and this is included in the document, was investigate cases that were not currently in databases. And so some of those cases, through working with tribes and many different cases, where it required additional research in order to find the case data. So these are very detailed reports, and in them are quite a bit of statistics and numbers. And if there are any questions, I have two people on the line from the Missing and Murdered Missing Indigenous Women's Working Group. And I apologize. This presentation is quite heavy for me. I currently have three relatives on the list that you'll see later from Alaska. Ultimately, what these reports, I'm going to kind of start to go through them a little quicker. These are very data heavy, very statistical heavy pages. And I think each one of these reports deserves to be looked at, and I encourage the body to take a look at all of them. And please, if you have questions, the experts on the line will be able to answer those. I put a few infographics here. This report is very heavy with infographics. This is a collection of statistics. I think I included this because we can go through each one of these reports and statistics. It's a stack of reports about this big, and that's just recent reports. This is an issue that has gathered attention for good reason, and the numbers and data are one thing, but the individuals that these data sets represent is the real impactful component of this phenomenon. So another report that I'd like to highlight is the University of Alaska came out with a Homicide in Alaska report in 2020. In it, these are just a handful of statistics that speak to the Alaska Native, Alaska Native American Indian ethnicity demographic in the state of Alaska. For me as a constituent of Alaska, these statistics are very alarming. They speak to individuals each day and the safety, you know, with which our constituents walk around each day in every city in Alaska. So these are very powerful, and I encourage this report to be looked at as well. And one thing I'd like to talk to, this next slide speaks to it a little bit more, but these statistics are full of numbers that are historic numbers and also not modern numbers, which speaks to some of the components in this bill and why it's necessary, and I'll get to that in a second. Data for Indigenous Justice came out with a report in 2021. The lens from this report is from the lens of an Indigenous person and also someone with experience and family that are currently missing. The lens of this report is to, you'll see the number is 229 cases. So the Urban Indian Health Institute, as well as Data for Indigenous Justice, have done a great job of doing further research and investigation into some of the data sets that have inconsistency. And so through that, Data for Indigenous Justice will continue to put these reports out and continue to refine these data sets and make them as robust as possible. This is data from the state of Alaska here in this report. What I really appreciate about Data for Indigenous Justice and this report is the nuances that they speak to, and they really go thoroughly into thoroughly illustrating the data inconsistency component of that and the reasons why. And I'd like to also allow Dr. Charlene Okpik, APOC, to answer any questions if you have questions about that. This report is less data heavy and more speaks to the systemic biases that can be found in the state of Alaska, and also speaks to the data inconsistency and how that can improve and how that we can take action on this phenomenon through the use of improved data. This is a Congressional Research Service report that was provided to Congress in 2023. There are a few of these to be found, and they're very, very data heavy. There are very few nuances in this report. It's very long and it's full of numbers, and I encourage everyone to also read that as well. This is just one slide that was powerful. I'm not going to read it, but it speaks to the nuances of the issue. And again, I'd be happy to answer any questions as we go forward on why the nuances are important. And this is the last report that I'm going to speak to. This is the DPS report. This is the second quarterly report regarding missing and murdered Indigenous persons in the state of Alaska. We're really grateful to the DPS commissioner and the work of the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Review, Murdered and Missing Indigenous Working Group for the work that it's taken to compile this report. And we're encouraged that with passing of HB 234, the data sets can improve and that this body will be provided with data that we can take action on and be able to learn from and improve on the statistics. I'm going to run through these relatively quick. There are names of constituents across the state that are currently missing. And these are all of Indigenous background. As we move through these slides, I'd like to point out the circumstances of disappearance are important, and something that Dr. APOC can speak to, who is on the line. These data sets are very important. And for the investigation, each one of these data sets are important as a whole. And thank you guys for bearing with me through the data sets of that. I'm going to have a few more slides here, but I did want to just pause for 1 second. That's a very heavy list to look at. That's human beings. The Association of Village Council Presidents came out with its own MMIP report just last year. And I took this quote out of it because personally, as as I was working on this bill, after flipping through those slides, on the Association of Village Council Presidents report, I saw this excerpt, and I think it's important to understand that there are historic relationships in the state of Alaska, and they impact each and every day today for Indigenous people across the state of Alaska. And I thank the state of Alaska, I thank the legislature for hearing this bill and for working alongside tribes to address this horrific statistic that we see each day in the state right now. So coming full circle, the challenges that we have for the phenomenon of missing and murdered Indigenous persons in the state, again, are remote Indigenous communities with thriving culture. And we have historical and modern Indigenous biases, which are not negative or positive. They're in place historically and important to observe in order to improve investigation going forward. We have exorbitantly high statistics in the state of Alaska, and that's been recognized nationwide. We have data reporting flaws in the state of Alaska, and that's due to many different pieces, some of which are cross-jurisdictional boundaries and the initial reports when someone is missing. We have very heavy cold caseloads as well as ongoing caseloads for DPS and the state of Alaska right now. We have a lack of law enforcement access for much of our state and continuing rates of these statistics as we have seen in Bethel this summer. What HB 234 does is it mandates cultural training under the Police Standards Council. What that entails is in the initial process and basic requirements for a law enforcement officer, it's mandated that they go through a cultural training that's supervised by an Indigenous entity. And the language, we can go through that as well. It sets into state statute two MMIP full-time investigator positions under DPS. And that's at the request of Commissioner Cockrell, and he is available here to speak to that as well. This is imperative, and in SB 151 in the hearing last month, it was actually stated that number should be up to four, and that's due to, on the record, it's been said many times this session, that the current MMIP investigators have expressed being overworked with the high volume of cases. And so that's actually recommended from DPS to be up from two to four. HB 234 establishes the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons Review Commission into state statute. And that's necessary in order to, as you've seen in the slides, the data sets are inconsistent, but they all uniquely show that there is a major problem and a major issue that needs immediate attention. The review commission serves as a body to investigate and collect data going forward, communicate with the legislature and DPS, and a first step to addressing the statistics. There really is quite a lot that needs to be done further, but this is a robust first step to collect the information. And lastly, HB 234 requires that this commission and DPS submit an annual needs assessment report to the legislature each year. And I apologize, I am a little bit nervous today, but thank you for sitting through the data.
You're doing just fabulous. Don't worry about it.
and this, as we wrap it up here, I just wanted to illustrate that this is supported by Governor Dunleavy. DPS has identified this as a priority, the phenomenon of murdered and missing Indigenous persons. And I ask that you support HB 234 alongside the tribes, communities, families, and your constituents all across Alaska.
Thank you. Representative Chair McCormick, do you want to go through a sectional, or it doesn't...
Thank you, Representative McCormick, Laura Cuscoquim, for the record. I'll have my staffer, Callan Jaitlik-Sifsoff, go through the sectional.
Okay, thanks.
For the record, my name is Callan Trifluxifsoff, and through the Vice Chair McCabe, I'll go through the sectional analysis right now for HB 234. I'll more or less read verbatim, and if you guys have questions, feel free to ask. Section 1 amends State Statute 18.65.240A by adding a mandatory cultural training component to the requirement standards as an appointed police officer in the state of Alaska, and it stipulates that this training be administered by an Indigenous coordinator or Indigenous entity. I do want to note that I'll leave it up to discussion that there is an opinion that's been spoken about by the murdered MMIP working group to alter the language there, and I'll refer to the people on the line to speak to that. Section 2 amends Alaska State Statute 44.41 by adding Section 44.41.023, which directs the Department of Public Safety to employ at least two individuals to investigate cases involving MMIP and act as the liaison between law enforcement agencies, communities in the state, and federally recognized tribes. So again, this is the component of the bill that adds two investigators under DPS. And this we can refer to the DPS commissioner on. It's been stated that this number should be up to four, potentially. Section 3 amends the uncodified law of the state of Alaska by adding the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons Review Commission into state statute. Section 4 directs the DPS to conduct a needs assessment report to determine how to increase protective and investigative resources for identifying and reporting cases of missing and murdered Indigenous people within the state criminal justice system. It stipulates that no later than January 1st, 2025, the department must submit a report, a written report, to the Senate Secretary, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives, and notify the legislature that the report is ready. And so this is a component to provide the legislature with the data sets and, in theory, improve on that each year to address the statistics. Section 4 directs the Department of Public Safety. Oh, that's the needs assessment. Section 5 stipulates that police officers with a certificate issued under Alaska State Statute 18.65.240, on or before the effective date of this act, be granted 2 years from the effective date of this act to fulfill the requirements. So Section 5 gives a grace period to those newly enrolled police officers and stipulates, like I stated, that they be granted 2 years from the effective date for compliance. And then Section 6, 7, and 8 provide sunset dates for each clause.
Awesome.
Yep.
This is your first bill presentation?
My second.
Second. You did a great job.
Thank you.
So any questions from anybody on the committee? So I have one question. And, you know, I've often wondered at the different maybe news media coverage of any missing people, but especially the Indigenous people, why sometimes there's huge news coverage and sometimes you don't even hear about it. I glanced through your data set looking for Kodiak because I lived there for almost 20 years, and some of the folks that are listed on this report as missing or the last contact was when I was there, and I don't remember hearing about any of them. I wonder if it's maybe the commission, Commissioner Cockrell probably know better, but maybe there should be some sort of a public reporting component to what the commission does so that we can get the names out there right away. When a little child is missing, people go searching for them weeks and weeks, and they put posters on lampposts and stuff like that. And some of these, you look at them, and a person has been missing for months, and it's like, man, I'm just hearing about this now. So I'm wondering if there's, and maybe the commissioner is best to address that, but I wonder if there's something or if there's plans for something like that or some sort of a public communication. I mean, we have a Amber Alert, we have Silver Alerts, we have all these alerts, and there doesn't seem to be anything for this issue. And probably less of a question and more of a comment, but I'm sure it's heartbreaking for you. So,
through the Vice Chair McCabe, for the record, my name is Callan Trethick-Sifsoff, and thank you for that comment. I really appreciate that. We do have Kendra Kloster and Dr. Charlene Okpik APOC on the line, and I think they are well suited to answer that and reflect on that as well. I really appreciate the comment. Representative McCormick is carrying HB 235 as well, which is regarding databases and reporting. And so we think that your comment is very important to the conversation. Yeah.
So thanks. So one of the doctors want to make a comment. I'm not sure which one is more expert for talking to that. So you pick.
Yeah. Kendra and Dr. Apoc, would you guys like to tag team this question?
Sure, I can do that. This is Kendra. Can you hear me okay?
We hear you just fine. Thank you.
Great. For the record, Kendra Kloster. I'm the co-director for law and policy at the Alaska Native Women's Resource Center and also part of the MMIWG 2F Alaska Working Group. First, to answer your question about media, this is something that we have brought up a lot. And if you see in the data reports, it's not something that we hear about. And we have been reaching out and talking with media about, how to bring up this issue about how we can work together better to ensure that our cases are and our people who are going missing and being murdered are brought forward into the media. So that is part of some of the work that we do, because we do find this also very frustrating and concerning, as do many of the families that we hear from. And also as part of this is we work to understand the data, as Kellen talked a lot about, and I'll leave the data conversation to OCPIC. But there is pieces to that we've been working on with DPS, and that's making sure that we are, putting out reports around MMIP, and DPS has started to do that now. So we're understanding who and when people are going missing. And the bill that Kellen referenced, House Bill 235, is mandating for our law enforcement to put information into the NAMIS, that's the Federal Missing Persons Database. And that's been a priority for us as well, since we really do not have the full scope of what's happening. These numbers and these people that are going missing and being murdered are, of course, very concerning, but we know that that data is not complete. And so we are working on how we can continue to update the data, get the information out, work with media to be able to, uplift this. And I will also say there are some states, I've been doing some research onto, you mentioned the Silver Alert or the Amber Alert. There has been other alert systems that maybe the other states have been looking into or been putting forward. So that is another option to be looking at. It's not included in this bill, but is definitely part of, some of the things that I think we need to consider, for future legislation, or this legislation, but I know we want to make sure to get a number of things done. But that is another option. This is, this bill is important. It's got a lot of things covered in there, but this is definitely not everything that we need to do to address this crisis.
Thanks, Ms. Kloster. So I appreciate the comments, and Doctor, you're going to have to say her name again. I'm sorry.
For the record, my name is Callan Chithuk-Sifsoff, and we have on the line Dr. Charlene Akpik-Ipak.
Akpik-Ipak. Did you have any
comments? Good morning. Yeah, I think, Kendra, thank you for responding to the media issue. And, you know, I just want to reinforce that this is a complex issue, and we've really tried to put forward well-rounded solutions that include, you know, we've worked on media. I think in some of the first couple of years we formed the working group, media was one of our top strategies, knowing that we really wanted families to be able to speak for themselves and really get out the message. And I think that that has helped get us to where we are today, and that there's so much more to do. But I won't add on too much more there. I know that there's probably more questions also around data and still sharing testimony. So, but yeah, thank you for that question and appreciate Kendra helping respond.
Thank you, Doctor. And I see, go ahead, Representative McCormick.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative McCormick. What I just wanted to add on to that, I think in support of your comment, is the unfortunate reality is the onus is often on victims' families to contact news organizations. I know my favorite radio station and news source, Public Radio KYUK in Bethel, does a pretty good job of reporting on these things, but usually it's when a family has to kind of use their own time to reach out and let them know their side of the story, which I think the unfortunate part of that, too, is that's often what's necessary to get justice in a more timely manner. So I just wanted to add on to that, but also thank you for your comment.
Thanks. And I noticed there's some folks on here for public testimony. Was it your intent that we do public testimony today? Okay, so anybody have any questions before we start into that? Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Vice Chair McCabe. Thank you, Representative McCormick and staff for bringing this bill forward. And I just had a couple of questions, actually, in regards to some of the supplemental information that we received, and then I guess sort of a follow-up to that. But we received a letter from the Fitka family, and you know, it describes a pretty what seems like a horrific experience for the entire family as well as for their community. And I was looking through the slideshow and some of the data that is in there, and I noticed that the one of the line items is just labeled as environment. I did not see her name in that list, and if it's difficult to speak about, I understand, and we can maybe talk offline, but I'm wondering, it just seems like a lot of things are labeled as environment. How accurate would you say that that labeling is? Seems like in her case, maybe that would be labeled as environment, but I don't want to speculate. Maybe a question about what that means, environment, and is there really any sort of evidence as to whether or not those things are actually environmental causes? And then I guess the follow-up to that was there's a statement on the slide right after all the data from the Association of Village Council Presidents, which says the way of life was very different just 100 years ago and not have been here 100 years ago. I'm wondering, you know, if there's some context to that that you could share about what has changed in the last 100 years, how was life different 100 years ago, and you know, how have we gotten to where we're at?
Through the Vice Chair, McCabe, to Representative Ruffridge. For the record, my name is Callan Chithuk-Sifsoff. Thank you for that question. I'm going to yield. Actually, we have the DPS commissioner here in the room, and I'm going to yield to him to speak to that report, which I'm sure has a lot to say about that environment data set. So maybe I can yield after I answer your second question. I included this quote from the Association of Village Council Presidents because I felt that it spoke to some of the historic challenges that we face as Alaska Native and American Indian people. And those are both nationwide and also specifically here in this state. It was just Elizabeth Prachovich Day this month, and I grew up as a young child in Anchorage, very, very used to racist statements being made at me and my family, whether that was in Anchorage Airport or whether that was downtown Anchorage, whether that was my dad being mislabeled as a street person, as an upwardly mobile man walking through Anchorage. So without getting too sentimental or emotional, I wanted to speak generally to the unique challenges that we face in the state of Alaska as Native people. And it's a positive that that is improving each day. But with bills like this, HB 234, it's a first start for reconciling these historic challenges. So with that, I'd like to yield to the DPS commissioner to answer your question, Representative Ruffridge.
So Commissioner Cockrell, if you'd come up, I don't know how much you can talk about this case just because it seems to be ongoing, but if there's any information that you care to share, that would be perfect.
And Representative Ruffridge. Thank you, Vice Chair. And I think, you know, that specific case aside, I think the question is really in regards to the labeling of something as an environmental cause of either being missing or, not locatable of some sort.
Switch out chair.
Through the chair, good morning. My name is James Cockrell. I'm the commissioner of Alaska Department of Public Safety. And through the chair, Representative Ruffridge, if you could ask your question, for I have a full understanding of what the question is, it might help.
Thank you. Through the chair, Commissioner Cockrell, of course, thank you again for being here today. You know, we were given a very extensive list of individuals and their communities and a circumstance determination per DPS, APD, and FPD as either environment, suspicious, non-suspicious, or unknown. And it seems like a large number of those circumstances of their missing status is labeled as environment. And there is another document that's attached or given to us for this particular bill that sort of goes into a story of a very particular person who was not on the list, but who it sounds like may have been labeled as missing due to an environmental cause, but there may have been other sort of suspicious activity in regards to that. And I'm wondering how many of those cases that we were given in the slide deck labeled as environmental may have other sorts of issues surrounding their missing status and why they may be labeled as environmental, and if that's something you can be give information towards.
Through the chair, Representative Ruffridge, I'll try to drill down on this a little bit. About 2 years ago, we started putting this report together before we could get a good understanding of how our people in Alaska are missing. And so we reviewed all the missing persons reports. We put a team together to determine if they were environmental. I mean, we had a factory trawler go down in the Bering Sea with multiple victims on board. That was certainly environmental. We have people that were out snow machining or caught in an airplane crash. So there was a lot of different points that we looked at to determine if they were, you know, foul play or environmental. In Alaska, we have a lot of environmental deaths. Either out snow machining, they freeze to death. I mean, they fall through the lake, and airplane crashes. So there's a lot of factors when it comes into environmental. And the one case in particular, I don't know that I really want to get into it because I did meet the family up at the governor's office, and we did discuss the circumstances of that individual, the death of that individual. And, you know, I just don't think this is the proper place to discuss it, because certainly they have their feelings about how the investigation was. I've certainly reviewed the investigation. I've met with the investigators. I've reviewed the reports. and I'm confident in the findings of our department. I think we could have done a better job front end of the first call-ins to the village, Mountain Village, and it doesn't change the cause, and certainly we've reviewed how we're going to handle incidents like this, for we have a better response time. But that's about all I can really say. I did meet with the family up at the governor's office and discussed it, and I think we're at two different. We're going two different roads. I'm confident in the investigation that we did do. We put multiple investigators involved in the case, and the findings that we have were, you know, I feel comfortable with it, even though it's tragic to the family.
Just to follow up, and thank you through the chair. I guess it's not my intent actually to litigate or bring into challenge or question a particular investigation. I think the question is more in a general sense of if something is listed as an environmental cause of being missing, how accurate is that description in the data set as being an environmental cause, or is that something that it oftentimes is ongoing, as in that very specific mentioning, you know, where there may be a discrepancy or maybe something that is being challenged? Is environmental in the data set most of the time accurate, or is there any concerns with that data?
To the chair, Representative Rufford, that's a good question. I feel comfortable with the staff that reviewed all the cases of the department found as environmental. And, you know, some of the cases are back to the 1960s, so they're not new cases, certainly. So some of our reports are a little bit more limited than our current reports. However, I still feel confident that the best we can, based on the information we had at the time and the information we had in our reports, so they're as accurate as we can get it. Is it 100%? I'm not going to say it's 100%.
Representative McCabe.
Okay, so just for the record, I'd like to note that I turned the chairmanship back to the seat and the gavel back to Representative McCormick. And I think my question kind of dovetails on that, Commissioner, is how many different categories are there? I basically see environment, unknown, suspicious, and not suspicious. Are there any more categories for this report that it could be broken down further, maybe, and just to help understand the data? And maybe that's better for the HB 235. I don't know, but I'm just wondering how you came up with those categories, I guess, or how many there are.
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, that's a good question. You know, when I became commissioner, prior to that time is when, if it's all right, if I kind of go to the direction I'm going with this, there certainly was discussions about missing, murdered Indigenous people in Alaska. And I was following that on the side. And then shortly after that, I was called by the governor to come take this position that I currently have. And one of my priorities was to get on top of that issue. And because it is a statewide issue, it was an issue that I felt very strong about, that we had to get on top of it. I know that we had a working group with the federal government, and there was a lot of effort within our department, but I wanted to consolidate that effort for we had a better understanding of what's really going on. I hired one investigator to start investigating some of the missing and murdered Indigenous people in Alaska, and specifically ones that I thought cases that we could make. That investigator, she just got overwhelmed. One person was not enough. So shortly after that, you know, the decision was made. It was going to go for two. Two wasn't enough, and now we're up to four. Four, I think, is an appropriate manner. Currently, we've had investigations of four regions of the state involving six cases. And most of all our cases are what I call cold cases. They're not, this didn't happen. But certainly what we're doing is a lot more vibrant than we have in the past. And anything, generally the process is, if we have a homicide in, I'll say, one of our smaller communities or villages, we send ABI, or Alaska Bureau of Investigators, to handle it. Because I want to keep our cold case investigators investigating, or our missing MMIP investigators focused on the task. I don't want to give them new cases. That's what I got investigators for around the state. And so that's the direction we're going as a department. Any new homicides that we have, or suspicious deaths, I have the current Alaska Bureau investigators investigating that. And then I'm keeping the MMIP investigators focused on those type of cases. And currently we're working on 6 and 4 regions of the state.
Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Cockrell. I just want to note that we were supposed to stop at 9, but I think we're going to go over a little bit. That's fine. But if members could just be cognizant of that. Representative Mears.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to make one short comment. I want to honor and respect that we do have people online for public testimony. This is important work. I'm grateful we're doing this, but we also need to keep in mind that there's things that we need to keep that list from getting longer. We need to work upstream to reduce domestic violence and violence against women. We need to work upstream to reduce trauma, and we need to work upstream to reduce adverse childhood experiences. And working upstream on those on those issues will keep us from getting that list to be longer and longer. Thank you.
Thank you for that comment, Representative Mears. If I might just kind of take a stab at this question as well, I think one thing, and I don't want to speak to any case in particular, but the experience that I've had, feelings that people have, is things are oftentimes brushed off as environmental or, you know, just happenstance. And families will do their own investigating or will. Kind of no details that maybe have been left out or something like that. And so the feeling is, whether or not this is the case, I would argue it probably is the case, that things are just kind of swept under the rug for the sake of expediency. And so I think we have a lot of work to do to really make sure that families feel like they're getting justice and feel like they're getting representation. And I think, you know, your question about life being different 100 years ago is a good correlation, because I think 100 years ago, frankly, I hope this doesn't offend anyone, or maybe it should, the United States contributed to the issue of MMIP, deliberately tried to sterilize, deliberately tried to remove people from homes. They contributed to this issue. And so I think that's what it means by 100 years ago, things were very different. So, yeah, I think we're still working through the scars of that, and I think still to this day we have a lot of work to do. So a little spicy, but I think it needed to be said. So, Callan Jeflik-Sifsoff.
Representative McCormick, Chair, for the record, my name is Callan Jeflik-Sifsoff, and I just wanted to say thank you guys all, and thank you, Rep. McCormick and Rep. Ruffridge, Rep. McCabe, for your questions, and Rep. Mears for your comment. My last statement on this is I think this is a really positive bill, even though the content is really quite heavy. The reality is we kind of just have this. We have a major data set, an alarming crisis, and these are four tools with which we can address it. And so also, to answer Representative Ruffer's your question regarding the environmental data set, I think in large part, I thank the DPS commissioner for his work. And then with HB 234, the data points can be refined and more targeted and more accurate going forward. And so if there are any discrepancies with the disappearance or data sets with any disappearance. Sorry, I'm massacring this right now, but the positive side of this is that it, going forward, equips the state of Alaska with a robust set of tools in order to keep data sets accurate and serves to help the entire state when those data points are all collected. So thank you.
Representative Hemshute.
It's a quick question. Good morning. Thank you, through the chair. think this question might be for Ms. Chaitluk-Sifsoff, but feel free to jump in, Commissioner. The cultural training, can I get a little detail on that? At what point in an individual's training to become a police officer or a trooper would this cultural training take place? And then who creates it? I know it says who delivers it. Does that mean they also create the training? Thanks.
Through the chair, to Rep. Himshute, my name is Callan Chaitluk-Sifsoff for the record, and thank you for the question. I am going to yield a little bit to the DPS commissioner on that. It's my understanding that that is implemented on the first step of the basic requirements for a law enforcement officer.
Through the chair, Representative Himshute. Essentially, when they go to the Department of Public Safety Academy, whether they're a police officer or an Alaska State Trooper, we have two different types of cultural training that we provide
in Sitka.
Yes, ma'am, in Sitka. So I'm sorry about that. In Sitka. And the way I view this bill is that for our department, we'll add it into our in-service training that we provide our troopers. And in Anchorage, we have what we call the advanced training unit that provides additional higher level trainings for our Alaska State Troopers. And this is for our department. This is what my plan is to do, is when we have in-service training, they'll have received that training during in-service training, at least for the troopers. I can't speak for any of the other local law enforcement, but it's a good thing.
Thanks.
Vice Chair McKay.
Thanks. And through the chair, just one more. I appreciate it. Commissioner, I wonder if there needs to be another column on here. There is so many people. I mean, it's heartbreaking, but it would be helpful for us to know how goes it, how are you doing, how many of these were solved, what were the circumstances. You said they're cold case, and I know that that's got to be very difficult years later, especially when it's environmental, but if there are cases that were resolved and you actually found a perp, if you will, or somebody that committed the crime and you solved it, do they fall off the list, or is there a way to put a column on there? If they don't fall off the list, is there a way to put a column so that we know that your group has figured it out, if you will?
To the chair, that's Representative McKay, that's actually a good suggestion. I think in the future, if we do solve a case, we'll just put that footnoted on the person's name. I think either that or take it off the list because it's no longer a cold case. But I think it'd be a good representation if we did put solve, then they know, people know out there that we're still working cases. And so it's a good suggestion.
Thanks. So.
Thank you, Commissioner Cockrell. We spoke at the beginning of the committee about providing, if you had some comments that you wanted to make.
Through the chair, I kind of got off track here with the questions, but I truly appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk on this very sensitive topic. It's been a major part of what I'd consider our administration. If you look at even the governor and the governor's request, we've got $250,000 for like radio announcements and stuff like that around the state to educate our Alaskans about MMIP and missing persons and what to do when a person goes missing and how to handle it. So I see that as very positive. We've actually got funding in our budget, we have funding to continue our four investigators because currently when we first started it, we had one investigator and the federal government was paying for it. Eventually that money ran out, so we were just pulling it out of our budget. But if you see our request this year, we have a request for about $450,000 to cover our MMP investigators. And they're all trained Alaska State Troopers. They've retired. And I brought most of them out of retirement personally to continue this important part of what we do as an Alaska State Trooper. I'm very proud of the efforts they're doing. They're traveling all over the state. They were down in Southeast about 2 weeks ago, one I won't tell the community they were going to, but they're very active and they're cold cases for a reason, and they're difficult to make. But I have confidence in that we're going to solve some of them. We're going to put, put closure to the families, because that's really what we're doing now, is keeping the person accountable that committed the heinous crime, but also put that closure to the families, because they deserve that too. And I think that's what keeps those investigators going. And again, I'm very proud of them. Two are Alaska Native. One's from the Bethel region. One of my investigators is from the Nome region. So this is such a difficult topic. I mean, when you look at the consequences to the families, and not only that, to the victims, it's hard to, I got my notes here, but it's hard for me to even go through my notes. I will tell you that we're focused on it. I'm totally dedicated to solving some of these difficult cases. It's sometimes the families and us are not going to agree, like the one that we just talked about. But I feel deep in my heart that we did all we could do in that case. Could we have done a little bit better in the front end? Absolutely. I think we could have responded there a lot quicker than we did, but we didn't. But that doesn't change the circumstances of it. And so anytime we have events like that, we also learn from them. And, you know, we have to, because we are the Alaska State Trooper. We are the premier law enforcement agency in this state, and we'll continue to be that way as long as I'm the commissioner. We'll work as hard as we can to solve these cases and solve cases that come up during the course of the year. I mean, you look at the number of homicides we've had already this year, and we're looking, last year, I think, the state had 90 homicides for the whole state. We had about half of those, about 40, and APD had the other half. I mean, that's one of the highest years we've had in homicides in this state. And when you look at our cases, most of our homicides are in rural Alaska, and we solve them.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Cockrell. I want to thank you for the work that you've done and for your commitment on this issue. Your remarks are always very refreshing, coming from a perspective that nobody cares, frankly. So I want to thank you for your work on this issue and for being here today and your commitment to trying to solve this crisis. I want to thank Kendra Kloster as well for being online, and Dr. Charlene Akpik-Apok. Brief at ease. Try to get through some of the presenters that you see. I think for folks who called in early, we'll have you testify, try to keep it short. I saw someone called in at 9, unfortunately, just due to time constraints. If you could call back Tuesday, we will keep public testimony open. So without any further preamble, we'll now open public testimony. We first have Catherine Edwards of Tlingit and Haida. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
For the record, my name is Kashkani. My English name is Catherine Edwards. I'm Tlingit, Sea Native Raven Dog Salmon, and my roots come from the village of Angoon. I'm the third vice president of the Central Council Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. I also serve as our Violence Against Women task force. As the chair of that committee, I want to say Gunnish Chish and Hala for the opportunity to provide testimony on House Bill 234. On behalf of Tlingit and Haida, I want to say Gunnish Chish and Hala, thank you to Representative McCormick for introducing this important legislation. Tlingit and Haida is in support of HB 234 and urges you all to move this through committee. In the vast and diverse physical and jurisdictional landscape of Alaska, where the land itself holds the echoes of our generation's past, where we work to address pressing concerns that reverberate throughout our communities, and the unending and pervasive issue of violence against women and the heartbreaking phenomenon of missing and murdered Indigenous persons. It is past time that we put policy and laws in place to protect our women and provide our law enforcement with information and resources needed to accurately identify, report, and investigate missing persons in Alaska. Again, Tlingit and Haida supports HB 234 and urges you to pass this through committee. Gunnish Chish and Hala.
Thank you very much for your testimony this morning, Ms. Edwards. We'll now move to Mary David of the Alaska Regional Coalition, Kowarik. Please state your name for the record. Begin your testimony.
Good morning. I am Mary David. I was born and raised and live here in Nome. I am calling in representing Kowarik Incorporated, a tribal consortium in the Bering Straits region, and the Alaska Regional Coalition, a consortium of six Alaska Native regional nonprofits and two regional tribes. Together, ARC represents 109 tribes and 70,000 Alaskans from Ketchikan to Point Hope. I am also calling in asking for your support and to express our support of HB 234. Kowarik and ARC fully supports the cultural training components under the Police Standards Council, the full-time investigator positions within DPS, and establishing the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons Review Commission. Evaluation is always important, so we also support that DPS submits an annual needs assessment report to the legislature. HB 234 contains important steps to address MMIP in Alaska. Here in Nome, we have a local city police station and Alaska State Troopers, and Kowarik has 7 of the 9 BPSO positions filled for our 15 communities outside of Nome. Communication is important, and building relationships is important. Working together improves communication, builds trust, and creates a better public safety environment. HB 234, in the presentation, there were 18 pages of missing people in Alaska. And we also heard recently about, you know, the tragedy up north. So also having an MMIP investigations unit permanently under DPS is important for consistency, as well as ensuring progress on solving MMIP cases continues to occur. We all probably heard of or know of women who have been murdered or missing in our communities. The trauma or the unresolved grief that each family feels under these situations is heartbreaking. We continue to experience high rates of domestic violence, sexual assault, trafficking, and some of the highest numbers of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls across the country. We need to take steps to address this crisis. HB 234 is important, an important step and a start to doing so. Kuyana, for giving me the opportunity to speak this morning. Thank you to the committee and to staffers for hearing this important legislation, and Representative CJ McCormick for introducing it. Thank you and have a good day, everyone.
Thank you very much for your testimony this morning, Ms. David. Next, we have Shailena Lai of the Manilik Family Crisis Control from Kotzebue. If you'd state your name for the record, begin your testimony.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Shalina Lee. I am the manager of the Manila Family Crisis Center located in Kotzebue, Alaska. It's a 24/7 domestic violence and sexual assault shelter that provides services to both female and male victims. We are a hub community for 11 outlying villages, also referred to as the Manila Service Area. Our primary population consists of Alaska Natives, according to the census data of 2022. NANA, Alaska Native Regional Corporation, had recorded 7,682 people, which it noted 80% are Alaska Native. Keep in mind that this does not include Point Hope, who we also serve and is under the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, so there is some data missing. We fully support the HB 234. We believe with the mandatory cultural training being supervised by an Indigenous coordinator or entity is a great addition, as well as addressing rates of missing and murdered Indigenous persons. Our law enforcement officials that are hired are not often locals, but also permanent positions under the MMIP would be or is necessary to be able to handle the caseload that we have. We are hopeful that this will start the healing for those families who have been long waiting. This change can possibly strengthen our community's relationship with law enforcement coming in, and we understand there's a lot more that goes into strengthening a relationship, but this is a start. Tiku, for your time.
Thank you for your testimony this morning, Ms. Lai. Lee, thank you, Representative Baker. Next, we have Delilah Johnston of Nome. If you could state your name for the record, begin your testimony.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Please go right ahead.
Okay. Hi, my name is Delilah Johnston. I'm the Development and Environmental Coordinator, council member for the Village of Solomon, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself and my tribe. The Village of Solomon has been a longtime advocate for MMIWG in Nome, Alaska, where we're headquartered as a displaced community. We have hosted MMIT marches in Nome, and in 2021, I reached out to the podcast Up and Vanished, and the last year, the podcast host has been investigating the case of Florence Akpialuk in Nome. The podcast has just recently aired. I'm sorry, I'm winded. I'm hosting a housing workshop in Nome right now, so I'm running around. So the Department of Public Safety conducting a needs assessment to increase the approach to protecting and investigating MMIP cases within the criminal justice system is long overdue. In a state with 229 tribes, a state that did not even recognize tribes until July 2022, as governor tasked with implementing state laws and overseeing the operation of the state executive branch, and as a father and husband to Inupiaq women, is absurd. Prioritizing the raw material extractions from our subsistence resources, our lands, over the safety of our native people in the state is inexcusable. For any Alaskan representative to not take the time to understand the true crisis of the underserved and underrepresented original peoples of the state has been unjustifiable. The problem of the lack of acknowledging the dangers coming into our remote native communities, creating detrimental impacts to our bloodlines, for the state to make a dollar, continuing to enable the injustice, intentional systematic exclusion, and the lack of shared resources and funding to protect our vulnerable peoples while sending in or allowing outsiders to come into these communities and villages without having an increased protection plan for MMIP is backwards and encourages violence, trauma, homicide, sexual assault on our people. Of course, we support this bill, but we need more. We need more before our influx of MMIP cases, sexual assault, violence rates are begin skyrocketing, and a deadline well before 2026 or 2027. This bill needs to come before the man camps, oil production, mining, etc. The governor and each of you sitting here today need to have a voice in standing with our indigenous people as if it were the governor's daughters or your own daughters who were the victims in these cases. Because these stats in Alaska that make up our current statistics are my sisters, the state needs to send a clear message that this has to end now. I appreciate everyone's time today and allowing for public testimony on this really important House bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony this morning, Ms. Johnston, and for calling in while running around. We respect the hustle. Thank you. Ms. Comack, I mentioned that we wouldn't be able to get you on, but we're here now. So if you could go ahead and state your name for the record, you can give your testimony.
Hi there. Thank you guys for allowing me to speak. My name is Antonia Comack. I'm Inupiaq, and I'm an enrolled member of the Native Village of Shongak. I recently became a fellow for the Data for Indigenous Justice to advocate with and for them. A few weeks ago, I called in to provide testimony for SB 151, and now I am calling to provide testimony in support of HB 234. I have been a community missing and murdered Indigenous persons advocate for many years. I started this work after two of my best friends were murdered in Fairbanks. I have been an MMIP victims advocate for many years, and I've mostly focused on MMIP cases that are ignored by the Department of Public Safety and local police departments, such as Scottsby, Nome, Barrow, June, and Juneau. After speaking to all of these families, one thing always came up in every single one of their stories. They all felt like they were not seen or heard by law enforcement. They all felt neglected by the very people who swore to protect and serve them. There is no trust between victims, families, and law enforcement, and I truly hope that changes with this bill. HB 234 includes a mandatory culture training under the Police Standards Council, and that is extremely important. I was on a guest on a podcast recently, and another guest was Michael Livingston, who is a retired Alaska Native police officer. He said that he attended the Police Academy in Sitka in January, and no such cultural training exists. He believes that needs to be a part of their curriculum as well. He said that a lot of the officers were not from Alaska and did not have any knowledge of the history in our state. In order to train future officers who will be sensitive to the issues we face as Alaska Natives, such as systemic racism, this portion of HB 234 is very important. I also want to add that the bill includes only two MMIP investigators, and right now we have four. I don't feel like that's enough. I have been in touch with some of the MMIP investigators in person and through email, and they have told me many times, we are busy, or we have a lot of other cases we're working on. And one of the cases I asked about was a homicide case in Costaview. Susan Orton was beaten and strangled by her boyfriend in his home, and there was no investigation until an article was written about it. I also want to add on to what the general said about not being a lot of media coverage. But I agree that we don't hear a lot about these cases in the media, and I wonder if it could be a requirement that law enforcement does a mandatory press release to the media in a timely manner. I don't know if that's the solution, but it might help. And then Representative Lethbridge, he asked about Tracy Pitkin. That's another one of the families I advocate for. She's not on that list that you saw because her remains were found 12 days after she went missing, and that list only includes names that are still missing. Commissioner Cockrell said he didn't want to speak about it, but the troopers did not respond to Marshall for 5 days, and the local VCSO and local search and rescue called them for help numerous times. I read their daily log notes. Witness testimony was ignored, and that is another one of the families that they just feel like they're not heard. And to follow up with a lot of those missing persons cases being listed as environmental, it's at 77% of that entire list is 77% due to environmental. And he is comfortable with those statistics after reviewing them, but this goes back to law enforcement not listening to the family's concerns. And they're listing them as environmental based on suspicion, not evidence, and that is a problem. I think in order for MMIP crisis to move forward, it is important that law enforcement take responsibility and be accountable for the harmful things that local police departments and the Department of Public Safety has done to add to this MMIP crisis. Until they take accountability, we will not be able to move forward and work together, because the truth is that law enforcement has been extremely negligent and have not investigated a lot of these MMIP cases thoroughly. Thank you guys for allowing me to speak to you guys today.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Comack. We don't have any more callers, but I think it's pertinent that we have more opportunity for folks to call in, and so I'm going to leave public testimony open, and we will take it up again this following Tuesday. For members' awareness, I'm going to set the amendment deadline on this bill for Friday, March 1st at noon. On Thursday, February 29th, we will not be meeting. However, the Department of Corrections Budget Subcommittee will have closeout at 8 a.m., and following that, the Department of Public Safety Finance Subcommittee will close out at 9 a.m. As there's no time for any further business to come forward to this committee, we will now adjourn at 9:22 a.m. Thank you very much.